that again, man.
Hey, Deck, can I see that?
What? You can see it all right. Welcome, everyone, to the Business, Transportation, and Economic Development Committee.
The best committee in the legislature.
What?
The best committee.
The best committee in the legislature? Well, we'll let them be the judge of that. Our intent today, and then again next Tuesday, is to do some information sessions for the committee and focused on economic development. And so the next 2 days we're going to have, I've asked Richard, our committee staff, to line up, starting with the governor's office and the department, going on down through that, and the major statewide organizations and the regional economic development organizations, as well as LOC and AOI and anybody else who wants to jump in, give us a background on what people are doing as the preface to dealing with a lot of the economic development goals. My personal goal as I came into the legislature this time was try to position Oregon as best as we can for an economic recovery, with the understanding that we're not going to meet the human service needs and educational needs of our state unless we get people working again. And so that's my highest priority, and I think that's shared by all of the members of the committee. They have a commitment to do that. So now is your chance to tell us what you need, and I'm going to ask everybody who testifies is what are the barriers and what are your specific plans, and if you have specific legislation that we should be focusing on, we'd appreciate knowing that specifically. So, Richard, with that, you want to take away?
We have an LC draft.
Oh, we have an LC draft to start with. I overlooked that. So, go ahead. What have we got? Excuse me?
I'm interested in LC.
Okay. There you go. Okay, so I will start it out then, just to be it's a little early in the session, so form-wise, we sometimes mess up a little bit, so I'll try to do this right. So we're going to open a work session on introduction of committee measures, and Richard,
gavel. The requested draft is LC 3347. It removes limitations on payments for funding cost-effective energy conservation measures by a large retail electricity consumer. Removes limitation on large retail electricity customer receiving direct benefits from energy conservation measures if costs of the measures are included in the rates. Declares an emergency.
And for the benefit of the audience who are not regulars here, it's the standard practice of the legislature to introduce bills that people request. It's not a commitment by any of the members that they intend to vote for this measure or support it in any way. It's just to get the process rolling. So with that, members, is there any discussion on this measure? Is there any opposition? Introduce and we'll close the work session. And now we will move to the informational meetings. Okay, and the first two, Scott Nelson, the Jobs and Economic Policy Advisor for the Governor, and Tim McCabe, the Director of Oregon Business Development Department. Welcome, gentlemen. And while you're coming up here, I just will note for the audience again, you'll note that a lot of us have computers open, and so that you'll know we're just not playing solitaire on these things. We're trying to go paperless, and for some of us, it's a little difficult, but we're trying.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I am Scott Nelson, and I'm the Jobs and Economy Policy Advisor for the Governor. And I just want to thank you very much for having me here today to talk through the Governor's agenda a bit. I will take a fairly high-level flight through that and then defer to Tim to talk about some specific legislative proposals as well as some budget elements with Business Oregon. A year ago when the governor started running for re-election, the first thing that he did was put out a detailed plan for jobs and economy in Oregon, strengthening the fabric of our economy, keeping the capital that does come in here longer, invested in higher value add activities. And to do that, He pledged to implement the Oregon Business Plan, something that he had played a role, of course, in kicking off in the first place. And secondly, focusing on policies that both strengthened our economy right here at home, where Oregonians could look to the skills and innovation of other Oregonians, for instance, in supply chain management, but where also the values of innovation and leading the world in certain industries, plus focusing on, of course, selling our products to the world to bring new capital in could be recognized. So, a month ago, we worked with the Oregon Business Plan to put together 10 things that fairly immediately we could engage in, along with them and other stakeholders, to form legislation and administrative actions that we could take early on in the session. And I'll just run through those very briefly. We can certainly follow up on those, but I'll also say that they should be reflected in the recent governor's recommended budget and the support for Business Oregon. I'll also mention that in addition to just the support for Business Oregon, there are, of course, a range of things here that are perhaps tangential to the direct mission of the department, but that are integral, of course, to economic development. So the first was to support the Oregon Innovation Council agenda and accelerate successful models for improving product and process innovation and technology commercialization. The second was to better structure and align Oregon's business development tools, resources and incentives to address gaps in capital availability and better support high-wage job growth. And that's actually something that we worked with the treasurer on. And you may have seen the first result of that earlier this week, I believe it was earlier this week, as he put in motion a plan to lower collateralization requirements to try to free up capital. Third, simplify and streamline regulatory and permitting processes. Fourth, making industrial land ready to support the creation of high-wage jobs. And Senator, as you, Mr. Chairman, as you know, we've been engaged in developing legislation there. Five, advocate for active forest management of federal and state lands, utilizing woody biomass for renewable energy. Sixth, accelerating energy efficiency efforts. Seven, advancing infrastructure projects that create jobs and strengthen our economic foundation. Eighth, training Oregonians for high-demand jobs. Nine, finding innovative solutions for water use, particularly by the agricultural sector in our state. And 10, making targeted tax changes to spark growth. And obviously some of those have nearer term solutions than others, but we intend to remain very focused on each of them. And that makes up the large bit of our economic development agenda for this session. So with that, I would ask for any questions now or certainly just defer to Mr. McCabe.
Scott, those are admirable and pretty much, you know, the right things to do. Are you going to translate that into a legislative agenda?
Yeah.
The format, actionable format that we're used to in terms of bills?
Yeah, yes, sir. Obviously, the first thing was the intense focus on the budget. And hopefully, the budget that we produced is aligned with each of those goals. Secondly, we'll have legislation on a biomass effort, highlighting an effort and a need to have a statewide inventory of biomass feedstocks, including agricultural as well as woody biomass. Third, we'll have legislation on accelerating energy efficiency in the state. We are working on legislation that you are familiar with regarding availability of industrial lands, there will be there will be, I think, other legislation certainly as well that we will be supporting. For instance, I know Representative Clem has a bill that addresses incentives for local sourcing.
And would it be possible for you to provide the committee with, I don't know if you have LC drafts or something that is sort of an agenda, if we can get it in paper form, that kind of help us get some direction around that and see where we can work together.
Yes, sir. You will be the first to see it.
Okay. Other questions for Scott? Senator Atkinson and Senator Edwards?
Could you describe the governor's commitment to reducing or even temporarily reducing capital gains taxes?
In the budget that was presented 2 days ago now, I believe, there is room in the second year of the biennium for a capital gains rollover. The idea there being similar to a 1031 like kind land transfer or land property rollover, real property rollover, where if there's a liquidity event experienced by a taxpayer, they essentially roll over the liability for capital gains if they reinvest within a certain time, you know, a reasonable time period, in an Oregon-based job-producing business. And so, functionally, what that means is that if, for instance, in year two, let's say you have a basis on an investment of $10,000, it's grown to $20,000, so you would normally realize taxable gain of $10,000. If you take the $20,000 and reinvest it, then you don't actually become liable for the tax until a subsequent realization, when in fact you don't again reinvest it.
If you come by my office maybe next week, I'd like to talk. I've got a few. Been working on this for a long time. I have a few proposals I'd just like to bounce off you. Might, at least in my mind, be hopefully part of your solution. But I think that any reduction to capital gains needs to be really simple and easy to understand. Whether it's, I think, conversion of real property into business property, perhaps. I'd just like to talk to you about that. So. Thank you very much.
I'd enjoy it. Thank you.
Senator Edwards?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Scott, you said part of the agenda is to simplify and streamline permitting processes. I wanted to let you know that there's a very bipartisan group of us that is interested in the same thing, and we've started discussions. I'm the chair of the Natural Resources Sub for Ways and Means, and so as I talk with agency directors and whatnot, I've been bringing that up, and I've been talking with the Republican senators and Democratic senators alike. They're very interested in pursuing this, so I wanted to let you know that we're working on that, and I'm very much looking forward to working with you and the Natural Resources Policy Advisor to be in the governor's office generally on that very issue. So I hope that we can do something real. And when I say real, I mean not like just, you know, taking a permit that wasn't previously online and putting it online. I mean, that's not, but something that is substantive and really does simplify the process and get people to a yes or a no quicker.
If I may, that's great. I think that I have likely had some conversation with some of your colleagues on that, and I look forward to having a formal discussion. I think that the governor has put it in terms of trying to eradicate the rolling maybe and creating an environment in which investment can rely on some certainty in the state.
Senator Rupp.
Thank you very much. I would just like to say that I think that in Oregon that we have really created a climate that is just in the last few years that has been absolutely anti-business. We have the highest capital gains tax in the nation as far as I know. We just passed 66 and 67, which has caused capital to leave the state. We just raised workers' comp rates 39%. You have out of control administrative rule writing authority that has really been hard on business, and DCBS has just taken a ride on business that has been, I think, has also driven business out of the state. Are we truly going to go in a different direction, or is this just going to be something that kind of something that will go in the paper but really isn't going to do anything for business?
The governor certainly intends to do more than just be in the paper. And I think that we can probably have a broader-based discussion of that offline or at some other point. Those are all the issues you raised are, of course, magnitude-dependent. I think the answer is yes. The governor really does intend to go in a different direction, and that's...
Okay.
Anything else? Thank you very much. Tim.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, again, thank you for inviting me and allowing me to talk a little bit about the agency. I want to apologize right up front. I realize now you're a paperless society, and I brought papers for you. So next time we'll send it to you electronically so you can look at it on your screens, which probably have better resolution than the printers I've got in my office. The first thing I'd like to have you take a look at is this map. Okay, and what I'm going to talk about today is I'm just going to talk about the last 6 months in my department and what we've been doing with business. This is by no means everything we do within the state because it doesn't address our infrastructure finance authority. I'm not going to talk about the innovation, which is extremely important to what we do. And I won't even be talking about our trade, which is another aspect that we do. But I do want to talk about business, and I'm going to address Chair Beyer and members of the committee some of the obstacles we face and the needs we have within the department. So this map represents the nine regions in the state. I have nine business development officers statewide to work with all of Oregon businesses. Okay, so that gives you some perspective. We're talking about nine people. In addition to that, we have five business finance officers and two recruitment officers. So this is a total of 16 people. So if you go to the very first pie chart on page 2, these are all of the projects over the last 6 months that my business development officers, business recruitment officers, and finance officers have been working on. We've got, and it's interesting, it rolled up to 400 projects total. And you can see right now 299 of those projects we're still working on. 54 of them we consider a win. These are companies that have chosen Oregon to either expand or relocate into, or they've taken part in one of our programs and benefited from it. Lost is companies that have chosen not to choose Oregon. Some of them have closed their doors for various reasons, and the inactive are some of the projects we started that have chosen to put it out for months or even years because it just doesn't fit at this time. So what I'm showing you here is 400 projects that I have 16 people working on. Okay, it gives you some idea. I think I'm just saying this. If I had 16 more people, I'll tell you this would double. Okay, because we're not beginning to tap the needs of Oregon businesses and what we can do for them. The second pie chart is about recruitment. Everybody likes to talk about recruitment, and what I want to point out to you here is if you look at the chart on the left, that shows all the industry, and what we truly recruit is a clean tech. And you can see that from the pie. That's over half of all of those projects. My point being is we use the business energy tax credit that is offered by the Department of Energy to go out and recruit these companies, and we've been very successful. We've created thousands of jobs using that one incentive. The others that you see on there, we didn't recruit. These are companies that are interested in Oregon that come to us. Okay, so I call that response. These are companies we respond to that have come to Oregon. They're companies like in Prineville, Facebook, which we successfully brought here, Amazon.com, Google, These are ones that are already here, but these we're working on right now that we haven't closed. Okay, and there's a table in the back that explains each of those industries so you can understand what advanced manufacturing means. But, and then I've got a breakdown in the lower right-hand corner that shows all of the renewable energy companies that we're working on now and trying to bring into the state. But one of the key things is the graph in the upper right-hand corner where it says regional. Those are the ones that our regional partners have brought in and our business development officers, our 9 business development officers work on. The other 116, I've got 2 people that work those projects. That's Bruce Laird and Jill Miles. And I have to tell you, they do a fantastic job. Jill's responsible for Facebook. She's brought in all of these companies. She's responsible for bringing the Home Depot Rapid Response Center here to Salem. She's responsible for Facebook, for Google, for all the things that happened outside of the companies we actively recruit. Okay. This is
Excuse me, Tim. I just wanted to ask.
That's fine.
Now, these are in more or less the frontline salespeople, Jill and Bruce. But I assume that I'm always fond of saying that the state doesn't cite anything. Cities cite things.
Right.
But your local, your regional people, they're the ones who would work with the Facebooks or the Googles, along with Jill. Once you get them interested in Oregon, that's how it works. Is that correct?
Chair Byer, members of the committee, that's exactly it. I'll use Jill as an example because she's a very good example. And we it's been over 6 years ago. Again, this wasn't a recruitment, but we determined, and when we started the Certified Project Ready Site Program, Jill's responsibility was to join what was then known as CORNET. It still is CORNET, but this is a group of site selectors. These are people that are hired by companies to help them research sites and tell them where to locate. They look at electricity costs, all of those factors that go into their decision making. Well, Jill's responsibility then was to get to know 10 site selectors nationwide in 3 specific areas. One was data. Warehouses, the other was warehouse and distribution, and off the top of my head, I can't remember the third because it was 6 years ago. But Jill was very successful. Our philosophy then was that if she knew 10 site selectors, those site selectors would know 10 more. Okay, and over these years, whenever anybody ever thinks of Oregon, they think of Jill Miles, and they call Jill. She's the first person they call. Facebook called her, Amazon called her, Google called her. It's those relationships that enable us to do that. That's one person. So if we had a few more out there doing the same thing, I think we could be much more successful. But Jill is extremely good at what she does. Okay, so Jill brings them in, and then we contact the local communities. We'll send out exactly the specifications of what the companies are looking for, and then we have the local communities give us a response, what fits, and then we work very closely with the cities, the counties, the local economic development associations like So Ready in Southern Oregon, SEDCOR right here in Salem, EDCO in Central Oregon. So it's we bring the projects in, but it really is truly a team effort. And on the renewable energy recruitment, we've created what's called Team Oregon. Bruce Laird is the head for the agency on that, but we work with cities, counties, mayors go on these trips. We've got a trip coming up the 1st of March to Tokyo. It's the largest solar, battery, and fuel cell conference in the world. It's held annually in Tokyo. We've gotten 2 companies to locate in Oregon as a result of going to that show. The mayor of Hillsboro's gone with us, the mayor of Salem, the mayor of Gresham. They all go on these trips, and we go as a group, and we call it Team Oregon. And it's been very successful. My department doesn't have enough money to do this on its own. So we really rely on our partners to help us with these costs. But as you can see from the pie chart, we've been very successful at getting these companies to come to Oregon. And not all of them are dependent on the business energy tax credits.
Tim, with the two people focused on the sales activity, are you adequately able to respond to all of the companies that inquire of Oregon?
Again, Chair Byer, members of the committee, that's a very good question. If we didn't have our partners, no. we couldn't do it. But once they come, we're very reliant on our local partners to help us through that process. So if I had more people, we'd probably be much more efficient. But I think, I know, we do a very, very good job, and we do it because of our partners.
Do you think we're missing opportunities to bring jobs to Oregon because of inadequate staffing?
I think, Chair Beyer, members of the committee, I think, yes, quite frankly. If we had more people and we had more resources, I think we could do a much, much better job. And Chair Beyer, members of the committee, I say that when I look at other states, and Chair Beyer, you know this, and probably all of you know this, it's very, very competitive out there. While we're out recruiting, what we really do day in, day out is work with existing Oregon businesses. Those 400 projects you see there, that's our bread and butter. I mean, while we're talking to these businesses, we've got other states that are actively recruiting companies here in Oregon. I mean, that happens. I always use Novellus and Tualatin as an example. Northern California was recruiting them heavily, and we managed to keep them here. And in the last year, they've added 200 jobs at over $73,000 a job. We only invested $400,000 to keep them here. They've more than paid that back in income taxes.
I did note that in the most current issue of the Western Government magazine, had an interview with Governor Schweitzer from Montana, who made the comment that he's in every state trying to get jobs, and his advice was any governor who heard he landed should arrest him, because he was there solely to steal jobs.
That's a good point. And Chair Beyer, Governor Otter in Idaho sends letters to our companies regularly, inviting them to visit Idaho and take a look at the state. So, like I say, it's very competitive out there. But I think, all that being said, with the talented staff I've got and with our creativity and our partnerships, we've been very successful, okay? But going back to the very first pie chart, these are 400 things that are going on in this state. Our activity level right now is at an all-time high for the last 3 years, and what that tells me is good things are happening. We've got entrepreneurs out there that are making things happen. I'm being a little long-winded here, but if you go to the second to the last pie chart, or third to the last, the one that's a full page, that shows statewide where things are happening and what's happening in the regions and what our projects, these are our retention and expansion projects, are going on. And then we even break it down. We can break it down by industry, by region. So if you want to know what's going on in your respective regions, we can tell you that. I think this data, if we're going to be successful, data is extremely important, that we know what's going on in the business community, and it helps us identify opportunities, and that's why we're doing this. We've just started tracking this. We've used an ACT database, and it's revealing a lot of information to us where we're unearthing opportunities. So with that, I'll be happy to take any questions, but one other thing. We have introduced Senate Bill 219. This is an incentive aimed at existing Oregon companies like Novellus that when they come to us and they tell us they're going to expand, we've created around creating 50 jobs with a minimum salary of $60,000 a job, and that will dictate the incentive that's given to them up front. Okay. What we're creating here is an incentive that works both for the company to retain them and for the state in the long run. This will more than pay for itself in the first 2 years. And then, as I said, all of the revenue we generate goes back to the general fund and not back into the department. And I can tell you for a fact that utilizing $6.9 million of one of the funds we manage over the last year, it helped create 12,750 direct and indirect jobs and return $55 million in revenue to the state. And I'll tell you, on that slice of the pie that we manage, that very small slice of lottery funds, we make money. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions of Tim? You're a silent bunch today.
I have one quick question.
Senator Atkinson.
I met with you yesterday, and you were great here talking about the investment that we make and what it turns back to Oregon. What would an increase in your sales staff look like?
Vice Chair Atkinson. Atkinson, members of the committee. You know,
I know you're not asking for that, which is the official party line. I guess I'm just asking you off the cuff. So with that caveat.
Yeah. Now, it's a very good question, and, you know, and I'd like to take a look at it. But when I look at my staff, if you look at that map and you can see Rick Minster's out there in eastern Oregon, and granted, that's a big territory and there isn't a whole lot out there, but I'll tell you, everybody in that part of the state knows who he is. I think the increase would all occur, and it's the politically incorrect thing to say, but we've got only two people in all of Multnomah, Washington, and Yamhill, and what's the other county? What am I missing up there, Scott? Clackamas County. Okay, so two people coming, the three most populous counties in the state. I think the increase, and I was forced in the last session to reduce. I had three people up there. So what it would look like immediately would be probably four people just in Multnomah, Washington, and Clackamas County, because I've got, again, talented individuals. They work all the time. We can't meet the demands. We're very dependent on the Portland Development Commission, Washington County, the City of Hillsborough, and our partners around that to help us. So that's where the immediate need is.
That's interesting. I would have thought your immediate need would have been in your sales operation based in Salem.
Well, you know, if we have the regional qualified, it's a good Chair Beyer and members of the committee. That's a very good observation. But the fact is, if we can bring them in, we've got talented people to help, you know, then we can better help those salespeople. If I could add, but adding salespeople is like you need to add. We need to be able to recruit and have the tools to recruit. I can have as many people out there, but if I don't have the tools to bring these companies in, that's why we need to look at the business energy tax credit and refine it to be more inclusive to all manufacturing rather than just renewable energy, and start taking a look at those things. Once we do that and we have the tools, rather than just enterprise zones and a strategic investment program, you know, we'd have more tools. But right now, because we've been successful with renewable energy, it's because we have that incentive that brings them into the state.
So can you be a little more clear on the tools? What are you speaking about? What would you like to have as the economic development manager if you could get whatever you wanted?
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, are you sure you...
No. You're not going to get it all, but I'm just curious what the list is.
Well, I'll tell you, Chair Beyer, members of the committee, I did get something in the governor's budget that I requested. He increased our credit enhancement fund from $7 million to $15 million. This is a fund, and you guys, you've all probably heard me talk about this, but this is a fund that we hold in reserve that we leverage. We get banks, for every dollar that we guarantee, banks are lending $6. So when that was at its apex in the last session, the session before last, at $11 million, we had almost $30 million leveraged in loans from banks. Okay, it got reduced in that session to $7 million. They took $3 million, so it was $8 million, and in February another million was taken out of it. So we have roughly $19 million leveraged on that $7 million right now. So the governor's foresight in doubling that will enable us to get more money out, not the state's money, banks' money. But without that credit enhancement fund, they don't loan the money. So that's one thing that Scott saw and the governor readily saw when we asked. We didn't even have it in the budget. And they said, if you had something, what would it be? And we said that, and it was. And the people I've got, the staff, were fully staffed now. These are all important things because you see the front line out there, but without the people behind them to do it, none of the programs work. So the Oregon Business Development Fund, the Credit Enhancement Fund, these are all things that benefit Oregon companies and small businesses, and that's what we do day in and day out. If I truly had something else, the Governor's Strategic Reserve Fund, that's another. He added $5 million. That's the one fund that we have flexibility that we can use to actually bring people in. And we've been very effective. As I said, we've shown a 300% return on investment on that fund. We tie that directly to jobs and wages. Okay, so if I had anything, it's this Senate Bill 219 that adds another $5 million and $5 million to the Strategic Reserve Fund and gives us tools to work with high-tech companies here in Oregon, high-paying wage jobs here in Oregon, to keep them here when they're being actively recruited by Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, believe it or not, Alabama. I mean, it's competitive. Utah's very competitive. Oklahoma's very competitive. Texas, they give away land. You know, so any increase in any of these funds and giving the new tools, and if you take the Betsy and broaden its scope, tie it to jobs and wages so we get immediate return on that investment, and then open it up to all manufacturing, those would be great tools, and that's what we've asked for in Senate Bill 219 and House Bill 2162.
Have you done an assessment of those recruitment challenges that you lost and sort of why you lost them?
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, that's a very good question. That's part of our ACT database. Whenever a project goes away and chooses another state, we always have a debriefing, whether it's with a site selector or directly with the project, because that information's extremely important. I can give you an example. We lost Schott Solar to New Mexico. This was a few years ago. And basically, our package just paled. By comparison, they put almost $120 million on the table. But the little things they do, they endowed a chair, a research chair at New Mexico University for $1 million. Those are the things we learn and see if there's some incentives way we can do this. So some of the things we do with the Strategic Reserve, when we use it, we tie it to jobs and wages so that that money comes back to the state, to the general fund. But we also give that company the ability to say when they're using that to train workforce, we get them to use Chemeco Community College as an example here with Sanyo. But Sanyo becomes a good corporate citizen in doing so. But they're using state funds to do that, but it's all coming back to us. So there's so many things, Chair Beyer, that we could be doing.
Without a lot of work, would it be possible for you to provide a summary of the sort of the losses over the last couple of years to the committee? Not today, but...
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, that wouldn't be a problem at all.
And why? I mean,
sure. No. There's many, many reasons. Yeah. And it's not always money.
Any other... Bruce?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Land. Available land so that you can recruit industries that require significant parcels. Do we have enough? Do we need to improve the process to identify land? Talk a little bit about that. The other part of this, and I'll give you the green light to pass if you want, is the transportation planning rule. If that, in your mind, has created an additional hurdle.
Do I say anything, sir?
Not on that, but on the land.
Well, generally on land, as I noted, Senator, it is a priority of the governor's, and in fact we have been working with a range of legislators on producing some legislation.
Senator Starr, members of the committee, that's a very good observation, and many of you were here back in 2003 when we introduced the Certified Project Ready Site Program, and that was because at the time we had a lot of industrial land, but it was not ready to be developed for any number of reasons, and one of the big reasons was the permitting process in the state was onerous. And back then, people were making decisions, and it sometimes took 18 months to 2 years before you could put a shovel in the ground. We fixed that. But it was easy to do on those first 12 sites and the 50 sites we've done since, but now we're facing sites that are much more difficult, that have infrastructure needs, that have wetlands issues. So we need to work with both the Department of Land and Conservation, ODOT, and DEQ, and do a collaborative effort to identify the most promising lands and get over those obstacles. As far as the transportation, I am going to take a pass.
Just a quick follow-up. As you look at the the projects or the companies that we've lost, have we lost a measurable percentage based on the fact that they needed 200 acres and 200 acres wasn't available in the region or the area of the state that they were interested in locating in, or maybe it was 150 acres or whatever the number might be? Is that measurable? I mean,
Senator Starr, members of the committee, that's a very good question. Yeah, typically when they need a site that large, and when it's around the renewable energy sector, they also need the electrical infrastructure that goes along with it, and the water and the population. So in answer to your question, yes, we have lost because of that, but it's always in the urban part of the state.
Thank you.
Just a comment. I've looked at that, and I commend you for the work that the department has done on that. But my observation when I looked at the inventory was there's a lot of communities that have done some really good work, but unfortunately they probably don't meet the other requirements that you put out there. I think we're not doing very well in the valley, is my sense. We're probably the demand, labor market demands makes it much more tough to cite the companies, and we probably lost some on that. It would be interesting to get your perspective, not right now, but later, in terms of what the availability of land and what your assessment of that is from a development professional.
Yeah. Chair Beyer, members of the committee, would be happy to do that, and I think it's a very good observation. I'll just digress a little bit, and one of the things the certified site enabled us to do way back in 2003, we had communities like Lebanon, and I use this as an example. Everybody wanted to be a high-tech community. Well, you need people. But what we did with the certified site program, we were able to go out to those communities and say, look, this isn't going to happen, but you could do this. And we got the land certified. And I always use Lebanon as an example because the site that's out there, it was one of the original 12 certified sites. It was the first site to be developed, and Lowe's Distribution Center was developed on it. That parcel of land had been on the market for 17 years prior to that. Okay, so the program worked. And we notified Lebanon, you could be a warehouse distribution center if you do this and if you commit to doing it, and they did. And now what's happened as a result of that, there's a medical school going into Lebanon. Okay, and all of these other things have happened as a result of one warehouse distribution facility locating there and bringing that wealth to the community. So I agree, Senator Beyer, with what you're saying, and we have to refine the process, and we're trying to do that. It's getting more difficult because we don't have that beautiful site, you know, and the infrastructure necessary, and the community buy-in. And I say the community buy-in because communities now are understanding the need. Prineville is a great example, and we certified a site right next to where Facebook located, and Facebook's doubled in size already. So this stuff works when done properly.
Thank you. Other questions? Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it. Let's see. Next up is Mr. Deckard and Mr. Wilson. Why don't you come up at the same time?
Yeah, why don't they?
I'll try not to let Senator Atkinson pick on you.
Good luck.
Good luck.
You could go out of order if he asked her.
Go out of order?
Nice necktie.
Huh?
Ooh, I can do that. I am. Fitness man.
Yeah.
Support one.
Whoever wants to go first.
Yeah, thanks. We decided I would. For the record, Chair Beyer, J.L. Wilson, representing Associated Oregon Industries. We were, many of you know, we were heavily invested in the Oregon Business Plan. It is a key initiative of AOI's. We had the great pleasure of going throughout the state. We visited 17, 18 cities, convened business people, community leaders, and the like to get regional input in the development of the plan. It gave us a lot of insight into really what's going on out there. Chair Beyer, you asked some of the barriers to economic development, and I'll touch on some of the things that were key points in our discussions statewide. The primary issue that really came to the surface was people are incredulous out there about the disinterest they perceive among their leaders in job creation. Sort of the misunderstanding there is regarding the private sector's role in funding public services, and that is simply that we can't even begin to talk about a government services that we want until the private sector is up and running well with the people employed in this state. And Chair Byers' sentiments, we're just pleased with what you said at the outset of the committee. We hope that it becomes the prevailing sentiment. But an issue of leadership and attitude was really apparent. The tax system of the state, in terms of two things, the volatility of the tax system and the fact that it disincents all the things you actually want, which is income and investment. If we could make some progress in helping deal with those two issues, particularly volatility through a stability fund, perhaps actually incenting investment in the state and income growth would be a good thing. A lack of industrial land, that has been touched on many times, but that was very pervasive throughout our conversations. Regulatory agencies that are perceived to be now out of touch and maybe at worst out of control, that was a very pervasive sentiment as well. Economic tools, things that Mr. McCabe talked about, like Senate Bill 219, things that we will support, that generally there is perceived to be a lack of economic tools and mechanisms to attract Oregon companies or even keep Oregon companies here and expanding. That's why we will support Senate Bill 219 and others like it that expand the tool base. A disinvestment in higher education and the connection between higher ed and job creation, it's well known. And it's something that we're interested in and being part of a solution. And in rural Oregon, obviously forest policy. I'm not an expert. I have friends in the back of the room that are. But forest policy as it relates to rural Oregon and the job prospects for rural Oregonians was a major concern. You asked about things we can do. Attitudinally, Chair Byer, appreciate what you said again at the outset of the committee, but I want to touch on something because we're talking about things that we can do and we all want to do something, but something to remember is the largest segment of Oregon companies actually don't want anything from you, and they don't want a program, and they don't need a handout, and they don't need special this or that. What they really want to be is just left alone to recover and grow and treated fairly, but it kind of lends credence to this do no harm philosophy. That's probably the best thing you can do going forward, and so that is something that we would advocate. In terms of the tax system, the volatility I talked about really would support a stability fund. Would like to see action on capital gains because it's become apparent that Oregon is going to have to import wealth. We don't naturally have a lot of wealth in the state, and we're not doing anything to attract it. And so capital gains becomes an issue in that regard. Improving the land supply. Our members got very excited when they saw that Governor Gregoire in Washington imposed something that resembled a moratorium on rules. That reverberated through our membership and is something that we would ask that you may take a look at. The Business Oregon proposals, again, relating that to Senate Bill 219 and others they might have, we will support the department's efforts to have more tools in its chest to attract companies. And you talk about forest policy geared toward accelerating woody biomass use, infrastructure projects, particularly transportation infrastructure, will be supportive. We'll support things dealing with energy efficiency projects, water withdrawal, and incentives for capital improvement. Those are all things that we will get behind. I think that you will find the business community is more unified now than it's ever been. I think you'll find that we're very pleased with what the governor's budget and what that means about his seriousness about keeping the state's house in order and how we move forward with sustainable budgeting. That is also very heartening to us, and you'll find the business community unified behind that. Senator Beyer, you asked about a couple of bills in your committee that we would support or not be inclined to support. Obviously, I've mentioned the department's bills of Business Oregon's. We'll support those. Lottery bonds for transportation progress, Senate Bill 260, we'd obviously support that. The R&D tax credit is probably the most important to AOI members, so we would support that, Senate Bill 315. Those that we might not support, obviously we're not inclined to expand things like unlawful employment actions or leave rights or even undermine existing economic development tools like enterprise zones. We would not be inclined to support prevailing wages in enterprise zones. So why have them if you're going to do that? So those are the types of things that we would not support under the do no harm philosophy. So that is sort of our sentiments and as brief as I can make them. Thank you.
That's brief enough. Questions, Jill? What a silent group today.
It was very complete and specific.
Former Senator Ryan Deckert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ryan Deckert. Mr. Chair and Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ryan Deckert with the Oregon Business Association. A couple of quick thoughts, and then I have a brief PowerPoint that outlines what we've identified. And so the first comment would be that the list, which I won't go over, reflects really well with the list that JL just read off in terms of some of the media priorities that would hopefully land in this committee. The second concern I have is that you mentioned a paperless legislature. So I'm just generally concerned because you mentioned that the committee will not be playing solitaire, and I'm generally comfortable with this half of the dais will not be, but I'll just put it on the record that I am somewhat concerned that this half of the dais might be playing.
Okay. Notes.
Okay. My concern has been alleviated. So, Mr. Chair, we have thought about, and in concert with many of our partners, Roy D. Mercer Consulting has played a pivotal role in terms of doing some of the research with Eco Northwest in terms of the research that are behind. But we've identified jointly that the public... Well, I might not be doing a PowerPoint. Yes, I am. We've identified that with our partners that the key issue facing Oregon is we have a per capita income problem, that if we simply earn like the rest of the United States, and certainly if we earn like Washingtonians, many of our issues would be solved. And like I said, the work that has been done is found in Washington is they've simply just diversified their economy to a greater extent and attracted those traded sector, whether it be forest products, agriculture, or semiconductor, into their state that feeds high-wage jobs. Also, the concern, as JL outlined, is that everything that should be winning in here in Salem seems to be losing, and everything that feeds that is winning in the state budget. And so the areas that are growing tend to be, well, not tend, have been over the last 20 years, have been your corrections budget, doubling of the corrections budget, and anywhere from 15% to 25% growth in human services, which really crowds out any dollars that are available for schools or higher ed. And so, again, as JL noted, the governor's budget obviously starts to chip away at that. We did some scenario planning.
It's interesting that you threw corrections in with human services.
Mr. Chair, just the big three. We looked at, and this...
Everything except education.
Slide hopefully gets at that. As we looked at the upcoming biennium, who wins and who loses, we tried to do some scenario planning in that OPB process. If you could get human services growth down to 10%, again, it's obviously been growing much faster than that, and there's federal incentives that lead us in that direction. If you could get your corrections and public safety down from the double-digit growth just down to 6%, you eat your PERS increase costs, you fund everything else basically at zero, K through 12, and Economic Business Oregon and all the other, that would necessitate, if business is done as usual, a 54% cut in post-secondary education. And so as we were discussing, that is obviously a great economic inhibitor to growth because educational attainment is the biggest barometer for the health and wealth of a society. And so you're chipping away pretty dramatically at that point at your educational infrastructure. JL mentioned this, so I'll just skip right on of why we have collectively care about these is that safe communities, educated workforce is what promotes a vital economy. What we've said is that we don't want to make the mistakes of our neighbors to the south, which have tended to look anywhere but facing up to the real public finance problems that they have by bonding, raiding local governments, accounting gimmicks, what have you. So the way we've looked at it in terms of, and again, we've done this with our partners, of resetting this $3.5 billion challenge that we have is first that you have to deal with the cost structure. There's no way to, and we tried to get somewhat specific with how one would go about dealing with that cost structure, and there's obviously no way that you start to get there without labor costs, because that's three out of every $4 that you spend is labor. And so you see the six bullet points of how you start chipping away up to $692 million on the labor front. Doing some of the education consolidation, whether it be in ESDs, we have 19 ESDs, Texas, which obviously much larger population, does it with five. So the need and the opportunity to consolidate ESDs. Try to limit your higher education budget reduction, obviously. Doesn't seem like there's going to be an opportunity for growth. That would be fantastic, but limit the reduction to 15% and really marry that with the autonomy package that seems to really have strong hold and was just heard in this very room a couple of hours ago. On public safety, again, trying to hold down the growth, and that means sentencing. And it's really using the best practices that we're finding around the country, that sentencing guidelines, and I'll again use Texas as a good example. They've reduced recidivism, altered their sentencing guidelines, and used technology like ankle bracelets, like in-home detention, to reduce their corrections costs, but also reduce recidivism and free up dollars for important education and higher education investments. And health and human services, we found, I think, was the most difficult area to find savings. But we hope you're able to grow this list. This was the initial listing that we could come up with to start to whittle away and get you to $2.4 billion. The second thing that we identified step two would be building healthy reserves, and so we have worked in concert again with many of our partners on at least the framework of a package that, and Senator Burdick has certainly been at the center of this, that would start building our healthy reserves, hopefully up to 15% using the School Stability Fund. Step three is marrying resources with results. We have obviously not in the state done a great job, and Race to the Top is a good example of we have not married the educational investment, and there does seem to be greater momentum here this session to really take that on and marry resources so that it's not just a number test, but it's also what kind of achievement we're getting. And so there will be a package of bills to achieve that. And then we mentioned the public safety and the higher ed. Education, healthcare in terms of achieving the waiver and the exchange. Public safety, using the best practices from other states to find savings. Budgeting, really looking beyond this two-year myopic look that we've traditionally done to that 10-year, and how do you build an investment pattern with a unified pre through 20 budget. And then, and we hope, as JL mentioned, that many of these bills make it to this committee, because this is hopefully, this would be the committee I would think of jurisdiction and certainly well-composed to deal with the investments that can grow income, obviously in innovation and in engineering, doubling the number of engineers. We've been able to track just on the innovation front, $7 in private capital for every in federal funding for every $1 of state investment, produced 663 jobs, average wage $86,000. So it is an investment that we would argue is obviously paid off on that. How do you, what can the government actually do that would create jobs and lure private investment? Again, and then it's the refined BSEE, the R&D that JL mentioned, and smart investments in education and higher ed, married with some downward pressure, which we think would occur in the reserve package on capital gains to get it to pre-66 and 67 levels. And agree with Senator Atkinson's comment about simplicity seems to be the hallmark of that. We still couldn't balance, and so what we said is, after we do all that, hopefully in a sequential process, that we'd be willing to look at. And I do think, again, the point that was made previously is that Oregon has a real issue of we tax high the things you would want to see more of, more of investment and income. So we're obviously the highest in the country, tied with Hawaii in terms of our investment on things that we would like to see more of, investment and income. We are, when you look at the 50 states, on things you'd like to see less of, consumption, you have to go beyond Guam and Puerto Rico to find Oregon on that. And so we hope that this really hopeful time, but also brutal budget decisions and choices and bills that you're going to have to work through might lead Oregonians to more receptivity around, is this really the public finance system that we need and deserve? And does it position ourselves well for economic growth? And we would obviously argue that no, it doesn't. As tough as the decisions we've made on the budgetary front, the ones we've done on our finance front have been even more deleterious in terms of economic growth. That is our presentation. Again, many thanks to Mercer Consulting for their fine work on this project, along with Eco Northwest. Mr. Chair, thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Stark.
Thank you. I have a question to both of you. I didn't hear any comments about tort reform. Can either of you respond to, because if you look at some of the cost drivers and some of these things, that becomes an issue relatively quickly. Comments?
Sure. Chair Beyer and Senator Stark, tort reform is one of those issues that never quite gets the play that it should in organizations like ours. We will be supporting a package of bills on tort reform, dealing with unlawful trade practice lawsuits, that you'd have to have a material loss in order to trigger one of those lawsuits. We'll also have a bill dealing with implied rights of action, that there has to be an express right of action in statute. So there are some of those things, that some of those small concepts that we're interested in, but on a big scale, probably not. We'd also be in supportive of tort reform efforts within the context of healthcare reform as a driving cost factor for healthcare.
So the nod means you agree with him?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, particularly we put it in healthcare. So I know you're waiting our book of legislative proposal. It's in there on the healthcare front.
Senator Rudd?
Thank you, Chair Barr. The question, and it was mentioned by the governor very upfront. J.R., you touched on it a little bit. But when I look out my door, and I live on the border between Linn County and Mary County and rural Oregon, I see a lot of trees. This state is blessed with natural resources. And it seems to me that the one thing that we could all get behind is our natural resources and making use of those to create jobs and do a little better with the economy. The people up in my district, everybody thinks Republicans represent the rich. In my district, they did, by Mill City, the average salary was $28,000 because of the mill closures and everything else up in that area. 60% of what is done in Multnomah County. So the governor was very specific. He wants to see the timber industry become a sunrise industry and not a sunset industry. And they picked up, we all talk about being paperless. We all talk about it not being green to cut a tree, when in reality, forest fires are the number one producers of greenhouse gases. So I just like, I know you guys do not represent, maybe those sort of industries, but don't you see that as being one of the drivers so that we could afford maybe some health care, better health care, or we could afford more higher education?
Well, I've got my friend Ray and Greg in the back, and I guarantee you if they have something, AOI will support it. I couldn't agree more. One of the prevailing sentiments was that forest policy was a complete weight. It was a millstone around rural Oregon, and we have a heart for rural Oregon. That's obviously where a lot of our membership is, and so we would support that, our partners in that, to the best of our abilities.
Another head nod. any other questions? You're going to let him off that easy?
Oh, yeah.
He's kind to you today. All righty. Well, thank you, gentlemen. And we finished a little bit earlier. Just ask.
Oh, am I missing? There was one LC draft that I didn't get, so if nobody works,
we'll do that in a minute. I want to just ask, since people are here, those who aren't signed up to speak next week, is there anybody who would like to comment along the same lines of economic development barriers or things you'd like to see? No? Easy group today. All right, we're going to open the work session for bill introduction one more time.
This is LC draft 3697. It eliminates requirements that Director of Department of Consumer and Business Services examine rating organizations at least once every 5 years.
Is there any questions or discussion? There's none. Is there any opposition? 36. What is it?
3697.
Six is introduction. Thank you. And anything else for the good of the order? Seeing none, we are adjourned.
Your eyes are really sick.